everybody, and welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode number 68. My name is Charles Lowell. I'm a developer here at the Frontside and podcast host in training. I'm here today with Jeffrey and Elric, two other developers here at the Frontside. We are going to carry on where we left off back in episode 62. There was an implicit promise to talk about the way that we do UI testing.
We had a cliffhanger.
Yeah, we did. It ended with a cliffhanger, and someone actually called us on it, which I hate it, because then, you know, they're making more work for you. But Ian Dickinson from Twitter writes, "Hey, you guys promised to talk about how you do UI testing at the Frontside, but never actually delivered on that promise." So we're going to try and make good on that today.
We like to resolve our promises.
Oh, you've been on vacation for a week, Jeffrey, and I forgot what it was like to have you in the office.
Not enough code puns.
Ooh, code pun. There you go. There's it's like code pen, except all of the code has to make puns. I like it. So the internet is awash with people bloviating about testing. So we figured we'd take our turn at it. So we promised to keep it short. We'll keep it focused. But it seems like, you know, a value that we do have. And so might as well talk about it a little bit. So you guys ready?
Let's talk about testing.
So I think, one of the best things to do is to use something concrete. You know, not just talk about abstractions, not to just talk about things that might be, but we're actually starting a project here in, 3 days. So it's going to kick off on Monday, and testing is going to be a key part of that. So why don't we talk a little bit about what it's going to look like as we kind of lay the groundwork for that project?
As we start this project, the very minimum baseline that we want to get immediately is acceptance tests in the browser. We want to make sure that when you fire up this app, it renders. You get kind of fallbacks for the basic functionality of this app immediately. And as we're building features on top of this app, that's when we bring in unit tests, is we say, hey, we're building this new component. We're building this new feature that's part of this app. We're going to use test-driven development and unit tests to drive the creation of that. But ultimately, our test of quality for that app and our assurance of quality over the long term comes from the acceptance testing.
People often ask the question, when is it appropriate to write those unit tests? When is it appropriate to write those acceptance tests? And how much time should I spend doing each one? And personally, when I was starting out with testing many, many, many years ago, I really, really liked unit tests. And I liked developing my code based around unit tests. And the thing that I liked about them was that they were fast. You know, the entire test suite ran in a matter of seconds or minutes.
And you get coverage.
Yes.
Like you get your coverage numbers up. It's like, hey, every line that I wrote here has some kind of code coverage.
Right. And it feels really good. And I also think that unit tests really are great for mapping out the functionality in the sense of getting an intuitive feel of what it's like to use a unit before it's actually written. So you get the experiences like, whoa, this is actually a terrible API because I can't write the test for it. So it's obviously not flexible and it's really mungy. And so I really, really enjoyed that. And the thing that I hated most, I hated acceptance tests. They're hard to write. They were slow to run. And it seemed like when they would break, it was not always clear why.
Wait, so we were just singing the praises of unit tests. What's wrong with them?
Part of it is kind of the way that you conceive of a test. What are you actually doing? And I think if you think of tests not so much as something that's there for regression or something that's there to drive your design, both of which are very, very important things, but more as just kind of measurement, taking a data point. What is it that I want to measure? In the case of a unit test, I want to measure that this library call does exactly what I think it's going to do. And so I can take that data point, I can put it on my spreadsheet, and I could say, okay, I got that base covered. So the thing is that an acceptance test just measures a completely separate thing. And by acceptance test, we're talking about testing as much of the stack, your entire integrated application as you can. Don't get me started on terminology. But when you have an acceptance test, what you're measuring is, does my application actually function when all the pieces are integrated? And so you're just like a scientist in the laboratory and you're making an observation and you're writing it in your notebook. Yes or no, does it work? In the same way that you're taking a perception when your eye perceives a photon of light. you can say, okay, that thing is there. Like, you know, when it bounces off the chair in the room, I know that the chair is there. So if what you want to measure, what you want to perceive, does in fact my application work for a user, then an acceptance test is the only thing that will actually take that measurement, will actually let you write that data point down in your notebook and move on. And so I think that the problem with unit tests is that, well, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just they don't observe your integrated application. And so that means you're blind. It's only part of the story, right? So that's why, you know, we find that acceptance tests really are like the highest value tests, even though they suck to write. And even though they take a long time, and even though when they break, sometimes they break at some weird integration point that you didn't see. And that's really hard to diagnose. But you know what? That same integration point, that's going to happen. That's a potential failure in your app, and it's going to be just as weird and just as esoteric to track down. So yeah, that's kind of my take on it. So you know, one of the things that you're describing, Jeffrey, is we set up those acceptance test suites. Why do we set them up? What? Because they're part of like a process.
Yeah, that process is that we start at the very beginning of a project on the very first day is when we like to set up continuous integration and make sure the repo is all set up, make sure the deployment pipeline is set up.
And so what do you mean by deployment pipeline?
So that deployment pipeline looks like, hey, we've got our Git repo and our version control under consideration. And from there, anytime there's a push to the master build, anytime a pull request gets accepted, we build that in continuous integration server, whether that be Travis or Circle or any of the solutions out there. We want to run that entire suite of acceptance tests and whatever unit tests we have every time we have a push of code to past a person's local box. You know?
Right. So a push to master is tantamount to a push to production.
Yes. That is the ideal, right? Is that any time that the code has been validated that far, that yes, this is ready to go to production, and our acceptance test suite validates that we feel good about this going out.
Yeah. And do you really? So the thing is, if all you have is unit tests, you've never actually perceived, you have no way of perceiving whether your application will actually work in a real browser with real DOM events talking to a real server. Do you really want to push to production? Like, is that a good idea?
We had some client work recently. We do have a lot of acceptance test coverage and actually a lot of unit tests too. And we changed the browser running on the CI server from Chrome 54 to 58 and uncovered a lot of bugs that acceptance test coverage found that unit tests just would never have revealed. The end user had a problem.
Now, why is that? What is it? So when we do an acceptance test, let's take it down a layer now. So like when we do an acceptance test, what does that actually mean? What are we describing in terms of a web application?
We're describing that we have an application that we're actually running in a real browser. And usually you're going to have some kind of like stubbed out things for authentication to make sure you can get around those kind of real user problems. But you're actually running the real application in a real browser, not in a headless browser, but an actual browser with a visible DOM.
Yeah, not a simulated DOM.
Exactly, yes. And so you can surface the kinds of real problems that your customer will actually have.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of interaction, like you're not sending JavaScript actions.
No, you're firing DOM events. You're saying, hey, click this button, or hey, put this text into this input.
Right.
And the underlying JavaScript should be pretty opaque to you. You shouldn't be calling directly JavaScript events in your acceptance tests. You want to rely on solely what's in the DOM.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the ideal setup with an acceptance test, you should be able to have your acceptance test suite run and then completely and totally rewrite your application. Let's say rewrite it from Ember to Angular or something like that. And it doesn't affect, you don't have to change your acceptance test suite at all.
Yeah, usually the only binding you would have is IDs or classes or whatever you're using to select elements. Right. So that should be it.
Right, you're interacting with the DOM and that's it. So now in terms of the server, so most modern web apps, in fact, all of them, certainly in the kind of swimming pools in which we splash, have a very, very heavy server component. Like our JavaScript is, I mean, there's a lot of requests. Just even load the page. And then throughout the life of the page, I mean, it's one big chatterbox with the server. Like, what do we do there?
So that's when we need to pull in a tool that can mock server requests for us. The one we kind of fall back on a lot is Ember CLI Mirage. That's built on top of Pretender. Like, it's a really nice way to run a fake server, basically. I would even take that a step further and would love for the tool to be another server completely that's running on your local box, mm-hmm. or your CI box or whatever, so that you get the full debugging available in developer tools, and you actually see those requests as if they were real ones. It's just coming from a fake server.
Right, right. So what we do, so as Jeffrey said, right now we use a tool called Mirage, which, you know, for our listeners in the Ember community, is, you know, they know exactly what we're talking about. It's the gold standard. What it does is it actually, it stubs out XML HTTP request, which is what, you know, most of the network traffic in your browser after the initial load is encoded in. And it's got a factory API for generating high quality stub data. And so your code is actually making AJAX requests and it's all working. Unfortunately, because it's stubbed, as you said, none of the developer tools work. But there's been talk about making Mirage use service workers so that you would have all of that running. You could still run Mirage inside your browser. It would be like a different process. In fact, I think the service workers run off thread. So yeah, that actually is very exciting. It's a great tool. And I think it's a great segue to talk about, you know, one of the things that we love. This is absolutely a mandatory requirement for us when we start a project, is to have acceptance testing in place. And so back in the bad old days, it would take us, gosh, I want to say like 2 weeks just to set up our acceptance test suite for a project. I mean, and this is when we were doing like Backbone, and this is when we were doing the early days of Ember. You know, when we would start a project, we'd spend all of that time up front just so that we could have an acceptance testing framework. And that was actually a really hard sell, because it's like, what are you doing? You don't have anything to show. And it's like, well, we're actually setting up what's an appiscope so that we can observe your application and make sure that it's running. And so the very first thing that we do is we set up an appiscope. And it's like, nobody sets up an appiscope, so they can't actually see their application. But one of the great things that has happened, and one of the reasons we love Ember so much, is that you actually get this now pretty much for free. I think there's still some stuff that's very white box about Ember testing. And a lot of times, you know, we talked about that ideal of, you know, you should be able to swap out your entire implementation of your app, but your acceptance test suite stays the same. That's not quite possible in Ember. You have to know about things like the run loop, and it kind of creeps its way in, but it's 95% of the way there. Like, it's mostly there, and it's good enough. I mean, it's better than good enough. It's great. You just get that for free when you start a new Ember project.
So we've talked a lot about the Ember ecosystem, mm-hmm. and what we like there about testing. We're going to be doing some React work soon.
Yes.
What's the story there?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Jeffrey. So we're going to be doing some React work soon. And so again, this is a new project, and it's absolutely a 100% ironclad requirement that we're not going to develop applications without an appiscope. But I think that the React community is in a place where you kind of have to build your own appiscope. So I know, you know, actually having kind of scoured the blogosphere, there are a lot of people in the React community who care very deeply about acceptance testing, but it does not seem like yet a mainstream concern or a mainstream pathway. So for example, you know, Jest, which is the tool that, you know, is very, very popular in the React community. And I was actually really excited about reading the documentation. It doesn't even run in the browser. It's Node.js only, which for us it's a non-starter. Like, that makes it really fast, but it actually it's not an appiscope, which is what we need. It does not let us to actually observe our application. It lets you observe the components from which your application is built, but you can't actually, you're blind to what your application actually looks like in production. And so I was kind of bummed about that, because now that I know that there is work, and I know that the maintainers of Jest care very deeply about making it run in the browser eventually. you know, there's some experimental pull requests and a couple branches. Who knows? Maybe those are even merged right now. But it's still, the point is, it's still very early days in there. And there are a couple of people who, you know, have used like Nightmare that they booted up, and they're kind of controlling, they're running acceptance tests in Nightmare from Jest. Now, that sounds great, but part of your Appiscope needs to perceive different browsers. And in fact, users don't use Nightmare.js. They use Chrome, they use mobile Safari, they use Firefox and, you know, normal Safari and Edge and what have you. And so there's actually a great set of tools, you know, Testem and Karma are all set up to be able to run all these browsers and have those browsers connect to your test suite and run them kind of in parallel. And so again, that's kind of a bar. So that's what we're actually working towards right now. We're running some experiments to try and use Mirage with Mirage and Karma with Mocha to actually get the multiplicity of browsers, actually using browsers, be able to use real DOM events and test a real API, or as real as API as we can get. I'm kind of excited about that work. You know, I hope that the acceptance testing story gets a lot better in the React community. And it's early days, but like I said, we care very deeply about it. I know a lot of other people care very deeply about it. Some people have some different, feel like it's not necessary. Some people feel like they don't need an Appiscope. They're like, you know what? My application is there and I know it. I don't actually want to look at my application, but I know it's there. So I think that's actually the pervasive model at Facebook. And obviously, you know, they're doing something right over there. Although, who knows? I'll keep my mouth shut. No, but seriously, there's some good software that comes out of there. The Facebook application itself is pretty simple. So maybe it's enough to perceive your components and not have to perceive your application as a whole. Or there are other ways that you can go about it. If you've got lots and lots of money, you can have people do it, and they do a pretty good job. And I understand that that's, you know, that's another strategy. In fact, I think that's what Facebook does. You know, I've read a lot of the debates between, you know, why they go with unit tests, why they don't go with acceptance tests. Yeah, they've got a QA team that probably has their own tools, or they, who knows, maybe they use like Capybara or what, you know, WebDriver or, you know, what is it, Selenium. You know, I know there's a lot of people, and those tools are really, really excellent, and they are truly, truly black box tools.
Elric, you brought up an interesting new angle that I think is starting to come of age that I think is an awesome addition to the toolkit, which is visual regression testing.
Mm-hmm.
And how far that's come in the past couple of years and how valuable that is for getting really CSS confidence. Like, yeah, unit test coverage is great for testing your individual components, for testing JavaScript functionality. But ultimately, the confidence around CSS comes from visual regression testing. That's the only way you can get that. And I think that's helping the CSS ecosystem be a little healthier to encourage better practices there, and having engineers who are more versed in JavaScript and not as versed in CSS feel more comfortable making CSS changes because they have that type of testing available.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. And I mean, when you're doing things programmatically, you wouldn't really know what's going on visually unless you physically go and check it. And then it's like, okay, that may not be the best solution because it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So the tool that we have kind of the most direct hands-on experience with is Percy. And I think you guys have more experience with it than I do. Yeah. But it's very intriguing. I'm like, when I heard about this, I was like, how does this even work?
It's so great to have visual diffs. So it'll, as it runs through your acceptance test suite, you specify, hey, take a screenshot now so it can compare against what came before. And sometimes you run into some finicky things where like, oh, I have some data that's not completely locked in. Like one of the most common diffs I get is, hey, this date changed in this screenshot from an acceptance test. Like, oh, that's because I didn't hard code that date to always be the same. You know, but it's great at surfacing like, hey, like this button moved 10 pixels. Did you intend to do that?
Right.
In particular, when we upgraded a component guide, style guide library, we noticed a lot of changes that came out of it, and actually they were okay changes. Mm-hmm. But it was important to know that those things changed.
Right. And there were some visual, you know, there were actually some visual regressions too, where I remember there was, some button turned red or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, oops, there was something got screwed up in the cascade.
Yeah.
Which, you know, always seems to happen.
And I think it's caught some bugs before and some changes we've made to like a select component. Of like, mm-hmm. Hey, this has the same functionality, but actually the classes around this particular component changed. hey, it doesn't look the same anymore. Why did, what happened? It's been a really valuable tool.
The acceptance test, like from the code perspective, actually completely and totally worked.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
But yeah, it was the acceptance test didn't catch it because they were not perceiving the actual visual style of the application. So it's a, yeah, it's another, it's a, another kind of, it's a, what is it, an enhancement or an add-on to your Appiscope so that it can see more things and you can perceive more things. And yeah, I love it. When you have an acceptance test suite, then it allows you to do those power add-ons because you're actually, you're loading up your whole application in a real browser, in a real DOM, and you're making it go through the paces that an actual user will do. And so you can do things like take visual diffs. If you're just doing unit tests in a simulated DOM, that's just not a possibility because you're not actually running the painting algorithms. Whereas an acceptance test, you are. And so it allows you to perceive more things and therefore check for more things and catch for more things.
I think my next area of exploration that I'm interested in is, let's say you have a web app with sound effects.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Is there something to validate the sound effects or like actually take like video capture of your app? Because that'd be really cool. I'm sure there's something out there, but I think that'll be my follow-up to go find out.
And then we actually touched on this on the episode on accessibility. You know, you can test your accessible APIs when you're running acceptance tests. Another thing that I might add is kind of, in terms of regression testing, acceptance tests have a much longer term payoff because I feel very strongly about test-driven development for your unit tests. I think unit tests are really, really great. And if you're building tiny units, especially novel ones that you haven't really built before, they're not like cookie cutter things like, you know, a component or something like that. It's, you know, some unique service or just a utility library or some bundle of functions. Using tests to drive those out is extremely important. But I almost feel like once you've done that, you can kind of throw those tests away. I mean, you by all means, if it's free to keep them around, but your tests also serve as a fence, a wall, a kind of exoskeleton for code, and that can be great, except when you want to change and refactor the code around, you have to tear down the wall and you have to break the exoskeleton of the code. And so if your code is siloed into all these tiny little exoskeletons elsewhere, it's going to be very hard to move and refactor, or it's going to be hard to do without rearranging those walls. So I guess my point is, with an acceptance test, you're making that wall very big. It covers a lot of area, and so you can have relative freedom to change things internally and rapidly. And so you actually, while the acceptance test is slow, the speed for internal change that it engenders, I think, is worth it. So I think that's another payoff, because I think that tests do have a shelf life. And I think that the shelf life for unit tests is very small, whereas for application level tests, it's very large. And then I guess the final thing is, it really, there's no such thing as acceptance tests and integration tests and unit tests and blah, 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 all the different types of tests. It really is just a matter of scope. It's like, how big are the lines that you're drawing? So acceptance test is a type of test that we give a name to for tests that have a very high amount of scope. They cover a lot, whereas unit tests have a very small scope. But there's a whole spectrum. For every piece of code that's running in between, there's a whole spectrum in between. All righty. Well, this concludes episode 68 of the Frontside Podcast. I told you it was going to be a short one, but I think it's going to be a good one. And I know that this is a subject that's very, very near and dear to our hearts. We don't dedicate explicit time to it all that often, but I'm sure, you know, we will return to it again in the future. So Jeffrey, Elric, thank you guys for joining us for this discussion.
And we're out.